This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
Hi. Any updates, hi. Katie?
Literally none.
Literally none.
Literally none. I need summer to be over. It's too hot. That's it. That's all I got.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on that. I'm so over it.
Yeah.
So over it. I'm trying to think if I have any updates, and I feel like I had something, and to be honest, now I can't remember it, so... We're on a bit of a time frame, tight time frame for recording today. So I think that we can just skip all this and get into it.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. We get these weekly chart updates from Apple Podcasts, and for months, and I mean many months now, we have consistently been in the top 100 society and culture podcasts in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Like every week we're like, what?
It felt very random.
Which is amazing.
It's awesome. I'd love to go to the Bahamas.
It is awesome. Yes. Yeah, me too. We have no idea how many of you are listening from the Bahamas, but we get like super excited every week when we get the email. We're really glad that you're enjoying the podcast. So this week I want to dedicate this episode to our listeners in the Bahamas.
Oh, hell
yeah.
Thank
you so much for your support and your listens. We really appreciate it. And we've definitely had this conversation before, but if we ever do get big enough to do live shows, we are absolutely making our first international stop the Bahamas.
Or maybe the only stop.
Maybe the only stop, right?
Maybe we just go to the Bahamas, call it a tour, and write it off on our taxes.
And you guys can come hang out with us.
We'll just go to like an open mic night.
Yeah. Hold us to this, because we've already told this to our partners and to other people in our real lives, so obviously it has to happen.
Yeah, remind us about it later, because we'll forget.
This week, I want to discuss the effects of global climate change on the Bahamas.
Ooh.
For anyone who doesn't know, the Bahamas consists of about 700 islands and islets. Islets. I'm going to be honest. That's the first time I ever saw the word islets. And I love it. And more than 2,000 coral reefs.
Damn, I didn't know that.
Me either. 30 of the islands are inhabited by humans. The islands form part of the Lucayan Archipelago, named after the region's indigenous Lucayan people, a branch of the Taino people who lived on most Caribbean islands.
Wait, how do you say that word?
Archipelago. Archipelago, archipelago.
Archipelago something.
The Bahamas shares maritime borders with Cuba, Haiti, the United States, and Turks and Caicos. There is a population of 397,000 as of 2021. The languages spoken are Bahamian Creole and English. It is home to the sixth largest coral reef in the world, the Andros Coral Reef, 124 miles long.
Damn.
Right? I want to see that.
Yeah, that's
I've never
huge.
Actually seen a coral reef, so I feel like I'm missing out. In real life, obviously, I've seen videos.
You are. It's amazing.
This is also where Columbus landed in 1492 when he got lost on his way to India. He landed on San Salvador Island. Just wanted to mention that he got lost.
That's the only reason we want to mention it.
Yeah. The island nation was under British rule for 325 years, and they became an independent country within the Commonwealth of Nations in 1973. I'm going to be so honest, like, I feel like I understood what Commonwealth was, but I never actually knew the definition of it, so I'm going to tell y'all. A Commonwealth refers to any group of people organized under a single government, particularly a republic. In the case of the Bahamas, the Commonwealth refers to a free association of sovereign states comprising the United Kingdom and a number of its former dependencies who have chosen to maintain ties of friendship and practical cooperation and who acknowledge the British monarch as symbolic head of their association.
Fancy way of speaking. Can you explain that to me like I'm five?
Like how each state in the U.S. is under the umbrella of the United States.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
It's kind of like that.
But the queen.
Like if we were all little islands, would still just be under the umbrella of the United States.
Okay.
So like, you know how the head of state for Australia is technically, well, not Queen Elizabeth anymore because she's dead. Mm-hmm. But like that, that was okay, the okay, head okay. of state. It's yes, the same. Thank same you. Situation. Yeah.
The head of state and Australia, that those were the words that I was missing to really connect that in my head. Okay, perfect. Okay. Thank you. I was going to say, like, you just said a lot of really fancy things, and I need you to explain this to me. Like, I'm the child that I am. You know that that's why we have this podcast.
Not me just giving you a confusing definition. And when I read it last night, it made sense in my mind.
Well, you were like, you had the background information.
That's true. That's true.
I don't have any. Cue Forrest Gump. I am not the smart man.
Anyway, the economy relies predominantly on tourism. It is a beautiful country and sees around 6 to 7 million tourists a year. That's just an average. The effects of climate change on the country affect the people living in the country, but it also affects their main source of income for the country. And before we move forward, I think it's important to let you know about how little the Bahamas actually contributes to the global greenhouse gas emissions. The World Bank statistics show that the country's contribution to the total amount of global greenhouse gases is pretty much nothing, an unimpactful amount of 0.01%. Yeah, I listen, you can't see it, but Katie's mouth is dropped.
That is like,
it's inconsequential.
And like, this is going to sound like a joke, but I mean this so seriously.
Literally, cow farts do more to harm the ozone than all of the Bahamas.
In the past decade, at least, the Bahamas have been a big leader in the fight against the causes and the impacts of climate change, which makes it even shittier that they have to deal with all of this crazy weather and natural disasters when it's due to other countries' more impactful greenhouse gas emission levels. Now, at some point in our podcasting career, I will probably talk about climate change on like a grander scale and get more into it. But for the sake of this episode, I want to give just like a little quick summary of climate change.
A little recap of the previous seasons, you know, of climate change.
Just so we have a little bit of an understanding. From a CERT report, and for people who don't know, CERT stands for Community Emergency Response Teams. And actually, my running mate, Christine, this year is on our CERT team here in my town. It was done by Alan Wright, Nathan Roll, and Antoine Clark. Quote, the buildup of greenhouse gases, CO2, in the atmosphere damages the ozone layer, which results in more exposure from the sun. The damage causes environmental changes, being a catalyst for physical disasters such as hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, and bushfires. Data regarding the global atmospheric concentration of greenhouse gases, such as CO2, shows that the concentration has risen by about 48.0% since 1850, and that's coming from a 2021 NASA report.
Oh my God.
Yes. Isn't that crazy?
Oh my God. These numbers are going to give me a panic attack.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's actually all your fault that people pollute. So apologize more.
It's truly my personal fault.
You did all of this in your 30 years of life with your avocado toast, you goddamn millennials.
I had avocado toast 2 days ago.
I can't eat toast, so it doesn't apply to me. I'm actually going to become a pick-me millennial. That's my new that's my new future.
I thought we healed that part of ourselves.
The environment's going to destroy it. Just like boomers did the environment. Okay, sorry.
Oh my God. This CO2 exposure results from typical everyday industrial activities that release the gases into the atmosphere, thereby releasing excess heat energy. Since the 1970s, it has been observed that more than 90.0% of the rest of the trapped heat has been absorbed into the oceans. Progressively, the oceans have warmed up over the past century, but the rise rise in ocean temperature is still accelerating. It is estimated that the top part of the ocean is warming up about 24.0% faster than it did a few decades ago, and that rate is likely to climb in the future. And that's from a 2019 Barunda report.
That is so much. That is so much.
So much. So now that we have that little overview of like... fucking climate change. Let's discuss why sea level rise is so detrimental to the Bahamas. The highest point of the island is 210 feet, and that is Mount Alvernia.
Oh my god, okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, this is what we're working with. The islands consist of limestone, which is an extremely permeable and porous mineral. Just in case there's anyone who, like, doesn't know what those two words mean. Permeable means allowing liquids or gases to pass through it, and porous means having minute spaces or holes through which liquid or air may pass. Think of Swiss cheese. The limestone allows the salty seawater to rise up from underground, which attributes to the flooding that is already happening. Andros Island, which makes up about half of the land area of the Bahamas, is mostly swamp at high tide and has the potential to see flooding that affects not only housing, but the flooding can lead to contamination of fresh water reserves with a possible rise in dengue fever and malaria.
Oh my god.
According to that research study for CERT, currently over 80% of the country's land mass is within 5 feet of the mean sea level. The mean sea level is the average height of the entire ocean surface. This is detrimental to both the people on the islands and the economy of the islands, especially because a majority of the coastal areas are inhabited with smaller bodies of water that contain exotic sea life, so that can easily be disrupted and destroyed. Oh, and 80% no. of people that live on the islands live within 3 feet of the mean sea level.
3 feet?
3 feet.
Wow. Wow. Oh my god. Like, that's like amazing in, you know, like real estate. But when your sea is rising fucking rapidly, oh, fuck.
In 2020, Moody's rating agency said the Bahamas was among the four nations forecast to be hit hardest financially by sea level rise, with an estimated 11% of its residents and 15% of its GDP at risk.
I feel like it would be more than 11%. I feel like 11% of
maybe
like having only 11% of their population at risk, I feel like that's a really low estimate.
This was back in 2020. I am sure that with the acceleration of things in the past couple of years, I am sure that that has risen. I don't know it for a fact. This is conjecture, but I feel like that tracks.
Yeah, because with 85% living within 3 feet, you know, that it feels like more than 11% is at
80%.
Risk. 80%, yeah.
Yeah. According to the UN, if projected sea level rise is reached by 2050, between 10 to 12% of territory will be lost, especially in coastal zones where the main tourism assets are located. There is a good graphic that I found. Maybe it was on the UN site. I can't remember where. I used a lot of different sources for this episode, but one of them has a really great graph that kind of shows the projection on a map. I found it really interesting, so we'll share that. Location also has an effect on the storms that come through the Bahamas. The Bahamas is part of the Atlantic Hurricane Belt, which increases its risk of experiencing severe weather. According to that CERT report, four major hurricanes have struck the Bahamas since 2012, despite the country's smaller carbon footprint relative to other countries that contribute on a larger scale to climate change. And that's from a 2019 report from Goodman. Over the years, the value of damages and losses are projected to increase. The 12 major hurricanes that have struck the Bahamas between 1980 and 2018 have had profound effects on the country's well-being and its economy, as they have caused an accumulated $2.5 billion in damages, equivalent to 30.0% of the country's GDP. And that's from a 2018 report by Hartnell.
Oh my god.
The effects, the monetary
effects, the damage that is done because of other countries' lack of accountability when it comes to their impacts on climate change and the climate crisis, the way that it's now affecting these smaller countries who don't necessarily have the large amount of resources that bigger countries have. I mean, it's absolutely disgusting. And then we're just over here like, oh, we don't give a fuck. Like, come on.
Not our problem.
Right? That seems to be the resounding statement from a lot of places. Now that we're on the topic of hurricanes, let's take a look at some that have affected the area of the Bahamas. The oldest accounting of one that I found was in 1852. The list is actually like a bit long, but there are 9 specific storms that I want to focus on, starting with Hurricane Andrew in 1992. Andrew came in with 160 mph winds and caused $250 million worth of damage. In 2019 was equal to $461 million, and 4 people were killed in the Bahamas. In 1999, Hurricane Floyd slammed the Bahamas with 155 mph winds and waves up to 50 feet in height. A storm surge inundated many of the islands with over 5 feet of water throughout. Electric and telephone services were out for days. Houses were destroyed. Restaurants, spas, hotels, and shops were destroyed. I mean, and that's that's their income. Damaged water systems left thousands across the islands without water, electricity, or food. Even with all the damage, only one person drowned in Freeport.
That's impressive. Like, for them to be able to, like, come together and ensure that a majority of the people survived that. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's pretty amazing. In 2001, Hurricane Michelle brought high winds and flooding to the island. Almost 200,000 people were without power as trees came down on power lines. There was a storm surge of 5 to 8 feet on New Providence Island.
Holy shit.
And honestly, I think, you know, I love watching shit about insane extreme weather and everything.
She does.
Yeah, I really do. Storm surges are part of the most dangerous aspects of these storms. In 2004, Hurricane Francis came battering in as a Category 3. It was the first time since 1866 that a storm impacted the entire Bahama archipelago. 75% of people lost access to power. On the island of San Salvador, somewhere between 13 and 17% of Australian pine trees were lost due to snapping, and there was several feet of water in the Freeport International Airport, and a lot of crops were lost. In 2011, Hurricane Irene made landfall in the Bahamas as a Category 3 hurricane. The peak wind gusts were 140 mph, and the heaviest amount of rain was 13 inches. In Lovely Bay, almost 90% of buildings were wiped out. Overall, the damage was around $40 million, which was equal to $46 million in like 2020. And there were no fatalities reported, thankfully.
Thank God.
In 2015, Hurricane Joaquin came in as a Category 4. This was one of the strongest known hurricanes to hit the Bahamas, with effects comparable to Hurricane Andrew. Around 7,000 people were directly affected. 836 houses were destroyed, 413 on Long Island, 227 on San Salvador, 123 on Acklands, 50 on Crooked Island, and 23 on Rum Cay. This hurricane left around $200 million in damages across the archipelago.
And when your main economy is like tourism and people can't come to the island because it's destroyed, like, where does that money come from?
I would hope from the head of state, but we know how that goes. In 2016, Hurricane Matthew made a direct landfall on Grand Bahama. On 8 Mile Rock and Holmes Rock, an estimated 95% of houses were severely damaged. The total damage was $580 million, and no deaths were reported. Again, thank God. In 2017, Hurricane Irma caused widespread roof damage on Crooked Island, and outer bands of rain created tornadoes on Grand Bahama. The damage was $653 million. We're not at the end of the list yet, but do you see, like, the pattern in how much the damage costs and it yeah. keeps going up, and how intense the storms are.
Yeah.
On September 1st of 2019, Hurricane Dorian came in like a fucking wrecking ball as a Category 5 when it struck Elbow Cay on Great Abaco. It had sustained winds of 185 miles per hour with wind gusts of over 220 miles per hour.
Oh my God.
This was the first Category 5 to hit the Bahamas since 1992 and the strongest on record to ever hit the islands. Dorian, and like, God, I fucking remember this shit. But Dorian, like, essentially just kind of like stalled over the entire country and just battered it. And it hit Grand Bahama Island the next day, with 180 mile per hour winds. The storm surge, dude, that shit reached 20 feet while also dropping extremely heavy rainfall.
Holy fuck.
Unfortunately, Dorian claimed 74 lives, with another 245 missing as of April 2020. Property damage equaled $2.5 billion, and the islands suffered $17 million in economic losses, and $221 million was required for cleaning up a large oil spill and debris removal.
So much to unpack there. I mean, 74 lives and hundreds of people missing is devastating. When you said that they were come with just like steady winds at the speed that they were, though, I was expecting thousands of lives.
Especially with the fact that the storm stalled over the country for like 2 days.
Yeah, it's still absolutely devastating. It's just another sign of like, this is not something that is new to them. And each year that it's gotten worse, they have attempted to try and adapt and make sure that each year they're not losing lives. But like, dear God, there's only so much that people can fucking keep up with. And wind gusts like that is not fucking one of them.
And those are only some of the storms. There were others that I didn't mention in between all of those. There were others before them. And since Dorian, there have been several other hurricanes and tropical storms, including Hurricane Nicole last year in 2022, which inflicted over $1 billion of damage to the country. Back in February of 2022, which was, I believe this happened right within the same time frame of that storm, but the Prime Minister, Philip Davis, was quoted as saying, "Within 15 to 20 years, what we now believe to be unusual, for example, Category 5 hurricane events, may become the usual. Such occurrences will have grave implications for the way that we live. The Bahamas is not a major contributor to the anthropogenic climate change. However, we are at the front lines of its catastrophic impacts. Our country will not be able to manage the impacts of climate change without significant collaboration and assistance from global partners," end quote. Let's talk about some of the ways that the country is trying to advocate for themselves and to the global community to mitigate the effects of climate change and the natural disasters it is causing to worsen. According to the UN, the Bahamas has developed a National Climate Adaptation Policy, 2006, a National Energy Policy, 2012, and amended its Forestry Act, 2014. They have promised a 30% greenhouse gas emissions reduction by 2030 and have promised to reach 30% renewable energy by mid-2030.
Okay.
According to the New York Times, quote, "The Bahamas has made strides to decarbonize its electrical grid and build out a network of storm-resistant solar installations. Its academic institutions are developing programs to train a new generation of climate-minded professionals. The government has introduced measures intended to sequester carbon, and the private sector is home to a burgeoning network of companies that are working on solutions to mitigate the effects of climate change," end quote. Speaking of the private sector, Coral Vita is a company working to restore coral reefs, and they have made a base in the Bahamas because the country has been very welcoming to climate-oriented startups.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Tyker, the company's co-founder, has said, quote, "The Bahamas is a living climate laboratory where we can test these solutions that can benefit nature and can benefit people," end quote. Coral Vita is located in an area of Freeport known as the Blue Action Lab, a free trade zone that is home to companies and nonprofits working toward building resilient ecosystems. The government has partnered with Rocky Mountain Institute, a clean energy advocate organization, to develop storm-proof solar installations. Recently, a solar installation on Great Abaco Island came online, providing power to a group of schools. The organization also helped create a solar microgrid on Ragged Island that powers every home on the island.
Just like incredible.
So fucking cool.
This is really cool stuff. And so many other countries, every other country can take these ideas and use them. I mean, this is great stuff.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. The country recently updated their NDC, Nationally Determined Contribution, in 2022 and included an objective to have 35% electric and 15% hybrid vehicle purchases by 2030. In their update, they acknowledge that many policies and initiatives are outdated and highlighted the need for building capacity and technical expertise while also giving more detail on mitigation actions and adaptation components. With this climate promise through the United Nations, participating countries are receiving help with adaptation and resilience, climate finance, energy, forests, lands, and nature, inclusions, transitions, and transparency. The partner in the Bahamas that is collaborating with the UN is the International Renewable Energy Agency. Their nickname is IRENA, so we're just going to call them that.
Hell yeah.
IRENA is an intergovernmental organization that supports countries in their transition to a sustainable energy future and serves as the principal platform for international cooperation, a center of excellence, and a repository of policy, technology, resource, and financial knowledge on renewable energy. IRENA promotes the widespread adoption and sustainable use of all forms of renewable energy, including bioenergy, geothermal, hydropower, ocean, solar, and wind energy, in the pursuit of sustainable development, energy access, energy security, and low carbon economic growth and prosperity. It is so clear to see that the government and the people of the Bahamas have made it an absolute priority to protect their ecosystems and their livelihoods from the dangers of climate change. More countries need to get on board because there's only so much that one small country can do when they're up against the effects of larger countries' negative impacts on the climate.
When you're up against the United States.
When you're like literally right by Florida.
Yeah.
If getting active and being an advocate is what your calling is, and I hope it is, here are some of the nonprofit organizations that you can get involved with: the Nature Conservancy, the Global Environmental Education Partnership, the Moore Charitable Foundation, and Friends of the Environment. And I'd also like to mention that Friends of the Environment was created in 1988 by a group of four Hopetown residents.
Oh.
That's a group of locals who are trying to do their best.
That's sweet.
Isn't it? Let's do what we can do to help the Bahamas, and let's do our part to hold accountable the countries that are negatively impacting them. We have one planet to live on. Let's act like it.
Hell yeah. That was very informational. Solid episode. Terrifying information.
I hate to see that the greed that other countries have impacts smaller countries that don't necessarily have the same kinds of resources that bigger countries do. And
yeah,
we need governments and large corporations to be held accountable for their actions and what they put out into the environment. Literally, we have this one planet to live on, and we're not all billionaires who can like shoot ourselves off into fucking space. Yep. So time to light a fire under the asses of people and governments and companies who need to get their fucking shit together.
Seriously.
To our listeners in the Bahamas, I hope that I did justice this topic, and we love you guys. We really,
really appreciate that you're keeping us in your society and culture charts. We appreciate the love so much.
Thank you for listening, Bahamas.
Till next week. Bye.
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.